This week on Reality Check, we're talking with Shannon Souza, the chair of Coos County Housing Action Team, and Rob Foster, representing Curry County Housing Task Force. We're talking about housing in Curry County, a challenging issue that affects us all. So hi, Rob, and hi, Shannon. So glad to have you two here.
Thank you, Lee. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's glad to be here.
Great. I want to start us off by just asking, is there a relationship between these two groups that we need to understand?
I'll jump in here. I guess about 18 months, maybe 2 years ago now, the United Way of Southwestern Oregon stepped forward with some help from Advanced Health to look at our housing crisis and hire a consulting firm to come in. And they started with Coos County to look at, get a snapshot. We were all feeling the pain, we all being workers that are just looking for a place to live and raise their families, those who are advocates for those that need some supportive housing, and the employers at all levels, high end down to minimum wage. So what that group did was to fund this formalized study, get a snapshot, what's going on in Coos County, which very much just reinforced our concerns, but gave us a higher resolution of knowledge so that we could target what really needs to happen. Based on that and the success of the outreach and the engagement of the stakeholders that resulted from those reported findings, there was definitely an interest to do a similar study with the same group down in Curry County.
Oh, you said Curry County first, but you meant Coos County.
And oh, now I apologize.
That's okay. Just a little slip of the tongue.
Yes. So there's, I think, about a 6 to 9 month gap between those two. We had the Coos County, the study was completed, an action plan was put together and presented to standing room only in a very large convention room up in Coos, and the intention was let's do that down in Curry also, so we can we can better understand what the problem is, see where there are differences between the two. And out of both of those studies, then we have these groups in each of the counties that have come together of those stakeholders. And as you may hear as we proceed, those groups are made up of some of the very same stakeholders. In addition to having similar economic realities and our geographic isolation with the two counties, we have those that provide services to those that need support, such as NeighborWorks Umpqua, whose scope really transcends our county lines. Some of the same employers that we have, particularly in education and the medical fields, those are the same stakeholders. So it makes sense for us to kind of know what's going on and share best practices.
Right. So we're talking about Coos and Curry counties, because are we worse than the rest of the state in some way? That it's a more of a concern from, was it United Way you were talking about?
Southwestern Oregon.
Yeah. So they're identifying us as having more of a problem than the rest of the state, or is this kind of statewide or nationwide?
This is statewide, definitely region-wide, and it sounds like it's nationwide. Mm-hmm. What's important, though, is to get that county-level resolution to specifically understand where are those gaps, really define them. What are the barriers to housing? And what we're doing, what we've embarked upon up in our Coos group, is also the flip side of that. Let's take an inventory of all of these stakeholders, and some of them seem like maybe unlikely bedfellows, but can we stone soup some projects together here?
Right.
Does someone have assets in land, regulation, requirements to actually invest in supportive housing? We should know all of these things.
The resources as well.
The resources. So yeah. Let's take an inventory of what all of these different stakeholders who are members of this action team come with, and see which projects does it make sense for us to really pull and push together as a unified entity to make them happen, so we can start to turn some shovels.
Yeah.
And I don't know if our situation is necessarily better or worse than what would happen in the rest of the state, or as Shannon said, even nationwide. I mean, you read about different communities that are having issues all across the country, but the situations are obviously unique. And even between the two counties, some of the situations and the housing issues that we're dealing with are unique and are better addressed, as Shannon also said, from a county level approach and a county level solution. And so bringing in some of those stakeholders who are already engaged in the county, and then public agencies, public representatives as well.
So, Rob, in terms of Curry County, since that's mostly our listeners here, pretty much all, because we're very limited in our range, what are those gaps in housing that we're facing, and maybe some of the resources as well? I mean, human as well as otherwise.
Yeah, well, as Shannon mentioned, there was a study that was done that was commissioned by United Way of Southwest Oregon, All Care Health, and a number of other stakeholders, and that was produced. That ended up being produced as a housing action plan that came out in the fall of 2018. Mm-hmm. And just like in Coos County, there was a public presentation of those results, and it was presented before the various cities and the county representatives as well. And the consultant identified five different challenges that Curry County faces. Mm-hmm. And some of them are going to be obvious to anybody who
but
is a resident
of Curry
County.
But even so, it's good to hear it, you know, yeah. As what they officially found.
Yeah, so one of them is that Curry County has three distinct markets. You know, a solution that might be appropriate for the Brookings Harbor area, or even distinct from Brookings and Harbor. The issues are different between those two communities, mm-hmm. and then the issues in Gold Beach and the issues in Port Orford are quite different, surprisingly. And so that even though you are now drilling down to a county level, then you actually even have to go down
right.
to the community level
sure.
to talk about specific housing issues. So that makes it complicated, obviously, to apply a one-size-fits-all even across the county. The second is that there's a deepening economic divide within the county. And, you know, what one of the things that consultant says is that Curry County could be the poster child for the missing middle, right?
It's so true.
Yeah.
I talk about that with people a lot because I find most people aren't really aware.
Mm-hmm.
They're in one group or the other, and they really kind of don't know the other group exists, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so that obviously creates challenges regarding the affordability of housing. And then the our county is aging, right? The the demographics are shifting, and that's kind of a distinct, I think even more pronounced than in Coos County, particularly in the Brookings area with the migrant retirees and that kind of thing.
I really see that in my work in real estate, definitely.
Yeah. And the economy, the fourth one that they identified is the economy has gradually transitioned to low-wage services. And so that's obviously related to the deepening economic divide. So you have retirees moving in with a large amount of disposable income who can afford houses at the higher end, but those retirees then require a higher level of certain kinds of services.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't housing that's affordable for the people who are actually providing those
right.
services.
So just one question on that subject before we move on, which is that are you saying then that what we typically think of as our economy here in Brookings, which is basically resource-based and a bit of tourism, is being taken over by the service industry for the retiree group?
I don't know if the consultant would go so far as to talk about it as being taken over,
mm-hmm.
but it is having a tremendous impact.
Okay.
And, you know, if that the market forces are just left to themselves,
uh-huh.
then obviously the real estate market, the construction market, the things all swing towards that upper end
right.
of the spectrum because that's where the largest amount of profit is to be made and disposable income
for sure,
is available.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does.
Yeah.
And if we're missing that middle group, what is the impact of that on housing then? Is that easy to summarize?
I think so, because and I'm not as familiar with the Coos report, so Shannon could speak to that. But what the consultant identified in Curry is it talked about the gap between affordable or supportive housing that receives some kind of service or has some form of subsidy, and then marketplace housing would be the higher end of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And in between are people who earn too much money to qualify for the supportive housing but don't earn enough to purchase the average home. So they're workers.
Yeah.
They're here in our community.
Yeah.
but they can't afford, they can't find a place to live or to rent.
It's so true.
Yeah, and so that's creating this dynamic, which I think probably the most helpful thing for me out of the report is that the consultant describes housing as a form of infrastructure. Just like roads or fire engines or, you know, electrical mm-hmm. systems, the housing infrastructure has to be strong in order for the community to thrive. And if we don't have housing for the workforce, then that's going to have a detrimental effect on our economy overall. So he particularly focused on that segment of the community.
Yeah, I can just tell you anecdotally, because of the work I do, you cannot rent a house here for love nor money. And I know a couple of different business owners, some restaurant owners, so forth. They can't be open as often as they would like to be because they can't find employees enough to keep their place staffed. And the reason for that is those employees can't find a place to live. Mm-hmm. And I've even seen some of them go out and actually buy properties to make them available for their workers, which is really desperate, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to know. I've heard stories about waiters and wait people in general living in their cars and so on. I mean, it's really quite desperate.
Mm. Yeah. And as when we conducted, there was focus groups that were conducted as part of the preparation for the various reports. And then especially early on, I don't know what the pattern was in Coos County, but early on in our initial task force meetings, we heard a lot of those kind of stories.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, going from, waiters and wait staff and things like that, but even going all the way up to law enforcement personnel, medical professionals,
That's really unable to find a home.
Teachers.
Yeah.
Right. I was just up in Port Orford and they had a listening session as part of the work of the South Coast Development Council. And there was several stories told there about teachers who had to live in RVs to teach in the community because there wasn't adequate housing. And so you can imagine the ripple effect that has on the whole community.
Right.
And when people like teachers and phlebotomists and, you know, can't find adequate housing.
And I know. And why would they stay if they, exactly. That's a problem. We have trouble keeping our teachers and our medical personnel and people like that because mm-hmm. of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really a problem that way. And I was wondering, too, do you think that this issue contributes to the homelessness in general, or do you think those are really, really separate issues?
Definitely. A consistency from both of the reports is that we're lacking housing at all levels.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't see is those usually with the more disposable income out on the streets or living in the campground or living in their car because they can buy down.
Right.
They can afford to access any market that they want to. So when that happens, then we put even more pressure. That middle area we're calling workforce housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a broad spectrum.
Right.
Okay. You're looking at your average median income for the area, and you're saying you're making 70%, I think is what we said, or above, like 70 to 120% of that. That's workforce housing. And they just get squeezed out by those that have more discretionary income. And then in turn, those that are in that workforce market put more pressure on those lower rents that mm-hmm. are in the what we call affordable
mm-hmm.
Housing
sector. Yeah, that makes sense.
That definitely results in this squeeze out of even more and more people squeezed out of their homes and their dwellings.
And, of course, all that pressure is going to inflate pricing, too, as we go along here.
Well, and let's just let's make sure before we end this talk that we talk about some of the tools and little spots of light.
Okay.
But before we go there to further exasperate the problem, you're absolutely right. In addition to a disparity between our minimum wage from 2000 to 2016, you look at 2000, and the worker could purchase a house, could think about even building a house. These were realities. Since 2016, the cost of building a house or upkeeping a house has stayed up with the consumer price index. It continues to increase, but we have not adjusted our wages. As a result, right now in Coos, I don't know exactly what the number is in Curry, but in that workforce area, we're looking about a disparity of $40,000 per unit. That's looking at units that are really need some renovation in order for them to be safe and healthy, to have a little community pride, or if we're looking at a developer coming in and cracking a larger scale multifamily kind of a unit. So that's $40,000 per unit. We're looking at 1,700 units shy up in Coos. I don't recall what exactly the number is down here in Curry, but there are definitely similarities in those markets. So we've got this gap. Now, in addition to that, as you know, being in the business that you're in, it's very difficult to get a contractor, even for the jobs that we have and can pay for now.
Oh, definitely. It's just crazy. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed about that whole question is that all of the real journeyman experienced guys are getting ready to retire, and nobody has come in to learn from them and take their place. I mean, not nobody, but there was a big trend there where everybody went to college and nobody went into the trades for a long time. And now we just don't have the workers who are skilled enough to do new housing.
Of course, go ahead. That's a segue into a little glimmer of hope or something that is a vision that we could really start to work with. The assets that we have in that area of building trades, workforce development. Mm-hmm. Southern Oregon Community College has an underutilized campus here.
Yeah.
They have a fledgling program in building trades that really could stand to see more participation. We have, as I mentioned, NeighborWorks Umpqua, that is a well-established nonprofit that is in the business of supportive housing and helping those move out of the need for that support and into workforce housing. Something else that they have that I see as particularly valuable is the capacity to act as their own contractor.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have an entity like that, and let's further hypothesize that we can get our housing trust funds up and running, which is one of the tools that our action team is actively working on, and house that with collaboration from NeighborWorks Umpqua, and get this mix of public and private funds that are specifically dedicated and earmarked toward that supportive, affordable, and working into workforce housing, and actually employ those that are underemployed right now and help them work their way into skills that we clearly need, into careers that we definitely have longevity of need for in this area, and up into solving the problem and actually building their own homes. So we're actively reaching out and engaging the trade unions in this conversation at this time. Looking ahead, who else are the stakeholders here? How do we get them engaged? They certainly understand the issue, but we need to really start with some cohesive visions of what we can actually do and make happen. And I think that on-ramping of the underemployed Oregonian into a very viable living wage profession in the building trades is a tremendous opportunity that we have here.
Oh, I totally agree.
I think what you're hearing also in what Shannon is saying is the value in these collaborative, cooperative groups.
Mm-hmm.
So having formed a group in Coos and in Curry, and of course we have cross collaboration between the two groups. When you begin to talk about that kind of scale, then you can begin to talk with NeighborWorks Umpqua, who can bring in a development team, a construction team, and that construction team can be involved in projects all the way from Reedsport down to the state line. And that there can be some, not guarantee, but there can be a backlog of projects and scheduled projects so that that contractor has some kind of understanding that there's work that's going to be available to him for a certain amount of time. Because you think, okay, they're coming out into this area. Of course, they have to find a place to live, right? Mm-hmm, and their workers, right? They have to be able to hire workers. To collaborate and cooperate together and to be able to coordinate these efforts with the college and those kinds of things, we can be much more effective than if it's isolated groups, you know, working just within their own community.
Definitely.
And so, you know, I think that's is something that I really want to express appreciation for, is the people that are involved in both teams really have that vision to, you know, cooperate together and to be more effective and to be have a more efficient use of resources.
Yeah, and while we're at it, I'd like to just plug NeighborWorks, because last I checked them, which has been a while, so my information might be a little out of date, but they had so many really interesting programs. There was ways you could save a little bit of money, and they would match it in such a way that you could buy workmen's tools or get more education skill sets like that we're talking about in construction and so forth. Really, really smart programs. I really like that. What other kinds of projects are you folks working on right now that feel like is, you know, on the pulse of things that in the evolving of our plan here strategically?
Mm. Well, do you want to share a little bit about the meeting we just had last week up in Coos about identifying the various projects in the pipeline?
Sure.
I know you touched on it a little bit.
Well, I would back up the two big tools that mm-hmm. we are rapidly working to formalize and develop so that we can use them are trusts. One is a financial trust, a housing trust fund. Last year, the voters approved mm-hmm. the notion that we can now take state funds that are earmarked for supportive and affordable housing, and that we can mix those with private funds for that same market.
I was talking about that a while back.
So that passed. Yeah. And that was something that we knew was imminent. So we've been talking about that in the housing action team. Hey, when that hits the streets, as soon as we have the opportunity, we want to be up and running. So we've been working with our consultant who has been a bit frustrated because he's not used to working in Coos and Curry County. And what has worked elsewhere in the country is to present these housing action plans mm-hmm. to the county, the commissioners, and say, look, it makes sense for you to invest in housing. You're going to get a great return on your investment. And they can successfully do that. It happens. Our commissioners don't have any money to invest.
Right.
So that's not working. So what we've had to do is say, yeah, we're not going to abandon the housing trust fund. We're just going to take it into our own hands. So we're establishing that trust fund. Oregon Coast Community Action is another one of our partners that also has a stake down here in Curry, and it brings a lot to the table. So we're starting there. We definitely have employers that are interested, and we're rounding up those stakeholders, letting them know what we have to offer, and starting to leverage those funds against each other. On the other side is a land trust fund.
Uh-huh.
We have tribal entities, we have county entities that have access to lands for various reasons. Sometimes cities are in a position to hold lands that they're not ready to be the developer on. That's not what their mission in life is. We have philanthropists, private individuals that are interested, but they want to wash their hands of the responsibility.
Sure.
So those are two tremendously important tools that we are formalizing. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of in the backdrop. And now we've focused on these two markets. At the beginning of the program, we talked a little bit about that supportive affordable housing. So uh-huh. that's at 70% or less mm-hmm. of that median income. We have workforce housing, that's 70 to 120. We can argue about numbers, they change,
right, of course.
But that's kind of the idea. And then there's market housing. We're not worried about market housing. We're engaging with realtors and developers and builders that are engaged there just so we have a finger on the pulse, but that's not our mission in life. So we've divided ourselves into workforce and supportive/affordable housing. at our meeting last week with workforce, what we've started doing is really formalizing that inventory. Who's sitting at this table? Who's interested? What land do you have? What other assets? Who else is interested? And what specifically is the barrier to this project? Why do you have this project that's sitting on the board that's not moving forward? How can we help? Mm-hmm. So now we have 3.5 different projects that we're actually taking actions on. And it feels so good to put some action into the action team.
And so this was really good for us here in Curry, is I make this comment kind of a little bit tongue-in-cheek, is that, as Shannon said, we're 6 to 9 months behind, so we can watch them and see what's going well and see what they're struggling with and learn from that and begin to duplicate some of their efforts. And so actually, in the last, I think, month and a half, we've made a concerted effort to make sure that our language and what we call different categories, how we categorize things like the percentage of average median income that qualifies as workforce housing, that we actually use the same numbers and use the same language so we can have those kind of cross-county conversations.
Right. So when you're talking about affordable housing, you're not really talking about the workforce housing.
Right.
You're talking about the layer underneath that.
Exactly.
I get it.
And there's been much discussion over terminology, but we've settled on a terminology, and we understand that every term that we use could be debated, but just for the sake of conversation and for the sake to be able to move forward on actual concrete projects, we've settled on various terms.
Well, that makes sense. Hold on for just 1 minute. Want to let anybody who just happened to flip the dial and found us that you're listening to KCIW LP, Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon. So just wondering how things like alternative housing, tiny homes, this kind of thing fits into these plans. Are there innovative structural construction ideas going on, or what are we talking about here in terms of what are these projects really going to look like?
Yeah, we haven't gotten that far in our process, so maybe Shannon would be better to speak to that.
We've got a lot. Again, this is an area that we have a lot of potential. I'm not up to speed on what's going on in the high school programs down here in Curry. I can say that in Coos County, we now have new facilities. We've got new teachers. We've really been investing heavily in the building trades development at our high school level. And as I mentioned, definitely at the community college level there and here. Mm-hmm. Tiny homes and teeny homes are wonderful in that they're something that you can really control in a shop, in a classroom. Mm-hmm. You can do them, you can 16-year-olds under correct supervision can be doing some real meaningful work in actually building mm-hmm. either parts and pieces or in some cases the entire homes. Right. So now we've got this pipeline of students that we're trying to engage and keep in school anyway, and it's a lot more engaging to build a home than another ping pong paddle or you know, whether they're kind of arbitrary project might have otherwise been assigned. At the same time that that's going on, there's been a lot of movement both at building codes and legislatively to really dig in to the legal requirements for tiny homes and teeny homes, which are even tinier than tiny, and make sure that they're still safe. Mm-hmm. But look for ways that they can be more affordable to construct. Mm-hmm. And then the third piece is looking at statewide and then at the city and county levels, increased acceptance of more dwellings on single family unit homes, these ADUs. So think of the mother-in-law quarters or no, it was not acceptable for you to have an RV parked there indefinitely. Well, maybe it is acceptable. Yeah. So, and that's where the teeny homes come in. Teeny mm-hmm. homes basically are something that you can roll down the highway legally. Mm-hmm. So they are quite teeny. I'm working on a couple of those projects right now and the tiny homes. So there's a tremendous amount of opportunity We've also learned that there's a dearth of manufacturing capacity in that area right now in the United States. And we sit around and scratch our heads.
In the area of people actually building these on a mass production level.
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure I understood.
So then you can put on your economic development hat and say, wow, what are the parts? Is there already someone who's doing this well, who's cracked the nut and has a quality product mm-hmm. and would like to franchise out here on the coast?
Yeah.
Because if we got a job for you.
Yeah, that's exciting. I mean, that's what we need is one more industry at least.
Yes.
You know, and Lee, as I listened to Shannon talk and obviously her depth of expertise, it's probably important for the listeners to know exactly what my role is on the Curry County Housing Task Force, because I'm not an expert in housing. My organization was brought in to provide organizational leadership and help with strategic planning, basically helping us narrow down what our priorities are and keeping us moving forward. But we have an excellent core team, an excellent steering committee that are experts in these areas and that are making contributions to that. And that would include Beth Barker Hidalgo from ORCA, and she's also the chair, I think, of the Curry Homeless Coalition, and Georgia Nowlin, who is a kind of well-known community member involved in numerous different boards and nonprofits, and Michelle Martin from NeighborWorks Umpqua, and Summer Madison, who's the Curry County Economic Development Director, and also on the Gold Beach City Council. And then in addition, from Coos County, we have Jen Schaefer from United Way of Southwest Oregon, and Char Luther, who's a community organizer that works with the Coos Group and also with United Way of Southwest Oregon. I think I covered everybody. Did I mention Michelle Martin?
Yes, you did.
Okay, great. So we have a great team.
It is a great team, for sure.
Yeah, and those are people that are making a real strong investment in the housing situations, both in Coos and in Curry. But I don't want to give anybody the mistaken impression that I sit on this team as some kind of housing expert, because I'm not. But I am good at bringing people, diverse groups of people together around a common objective. And obviously,
so
I'm passionate
important.
About the health of my own community. So
yeah.
That's why I'm here. But I'm really appreciating everything that Shannon is sharing and really getting even a better picture of the level of expertise she brings to the discussion.
I guess another area that concerns me is sort of the land use side of it. You know, if we're going to allow, I was talking with Court Boyce about how the county is now allowing these other dwellings on a property that used to be a granny unit, and they call them ADU?
Mm-hmm. Accessory dwelling unit.
Yeah. Accessory dwelling unit, just in case you don't know what the initials stand for. And so they're allowing those now, but there are other things that need to be kind of unscrambled, like up on our Cape Farillo area that was called, when they first made the zoning so you couldn't split an RR5 into RR2s, they excluded Cape Farillo because it was already going that way and it was already so residential. But then because of some legislation at the state level, they weren't allowed to do that anymore. And so they're trying to get power to the local authorities to make those determinations now. And there's a lot of things like that going on that are certainly going to influence how this all shapes up. And I guess one of my concerns that I've seen in so many places is the whole issue of density. You know, we only have less than 2% of Curry County is buildable because we're so steep. So we're pretty built out, which only leaves us a possibility of becoming more dense. I mean, we've got some projects, but ultimately, long-term, density is going to be an issue. I wonder if you've got some thoughts to address that.
Well, I think one of the things that's brought out in the study is the need for a comprehensive look at regulations and regulatory issues at every level,
mm-hmm.
from the county, how the state regulations are affecting development here, but also from the counties and from the cities. When were building codes, building regulations, when were general plans last looked at? And do they have the capacity to absorb some of these particular challenges that come with housing? And in a general sense, I would say that there's a need to look at those regulatory issues at every level. and to begin to address some of these specific issues with accessory dwelling units and with tiny homes and zoning and density and all of those kind of things, basically all of the above.
Well, and then as you can, you mentioned that housing is the infrastructure, but then you think about the housing and the people that are living there and the additional stress that that additional density is putting on your transportation, your communication, your electricity, all of your energy supplies, and certainly your sewer and your clean water. So again, it's that, okay, let's not create another problem while we're fixing
this one.
Let's be aware of all of these as we go forward. Yeah. And that doesn't mean stop. We need to increase our density. That makes more sense. It's much more efficient and effective for us. But at the same time, have we made sure that transportation-wise, that we're encouraging walking and biking? Is our public transit up to speed? Are the services there? Is the parking where it should be? Oftentimes, when we get into reactionary mode, and potentially when there's even a kind of a panic-stricken level to that reaction, some of the forethought just goes out the window because you're just scrambling to make ends meet. So that's another area that these coalitions or any of them, any time that we can get our elected officials and the agencies and the jurisdictions that are doing this work and knowledgeable together at the table, understanding what this big picture is and really looking for paths forward, ways to say yes. What does that look like? And I think also not being afraid to envision and dream big. We have to allow ourselves that capacity or we'll never see those step changes that we really need ever take place.
Oh, and if we don't do anything, we're going to be in worse and worse condition. We have to face these things.
And hopefully we will get to the position. As I said, our consultant was a bit dismayed that we couldn't go to the county and say, we want $1 million a year as a set aside just to start. We really need 10 million.
Right.
But we want you guys to kick in one. And they laughed, well, how about $10? You know, let's start there. So we decided, let's not let that be a roadblock. Let's start taking care of ourselves with what we have and see what we can do. Then in the future, whether we're talking to county commissioners or we're going out to ballot measures, we can demonstrate that we have a diverse group of stakeholders who understand how to work together to get things done and can also demonstrate measurable economic benefit from this. Then we might be in a position to request that $1 million, and you know, you kind of have this snowball effect. Success breeds success.
Oh, absolutely. That's well put. One of the things that I keep hearing about is that the Checo River is maybe already overcommitted and that that's a real stumbling block to development around here. And particularly with regard to the Rio Tinto property, where there's been a lot of back and forth about who should provide the water and how that was going to happen and so forth. Do you have some comments about that aspect of things, just providing that clean drinking water?
There has been, in our report, there is, they do bring up the Rio Tinto project, Lone Ranch project, whatever, the Borax project, whatever labeling that you want to put on it. That is an approved map. And the consultant did make the suggestion that a discussion should be reopened to talk about negotiations for the types of housing that are part of that project. The underlying issues, or I guess I shouldn't use the word underlying, the issues related to infrastructure and water and sewer and who pays for what and all that are not included in the report and really haven't been part of our discussions. We do have City of Brookings. The City of Brookings has been participating in our task force meetings, and that topic has come up, but for various reasons, they haven't felt free to comment on it. So it really isn't something that I can speak to or really have any knowledge about.
What about in general about the Checo having being such a limited resource? Do you see that as a stumbling block or where, what is your perception of that at this point?
My understanding is that the surface water rights associated with the Chetco River have, yes, that they've been fully allocated. Mm-hmm. And some of those, a good portion of them, and I believe rightfully so, and our state statute supports that, is to support our fisheries and the ecology of the Chetco. The way that water rights, so that's a surface water right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're talking about underground aquifers, then we're getting into some kind of murky waters, excuse the pun. But in order to tap an aquifer that is adjacent to or maybe even underneath a surface water that's already allocated, you need to demonstrate that there's not hydraulic connectivity. In other words, if I put down a deep well that's 100 yards off the Chetco and 300 feet deep, that I'm not actually pulling water out of the substrate of the Chetco.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the geology looks like here. In other areas, when I've worked on this type of a problem for industrial or municipal development, we engage a hydrology study. You know, and maybe that's already been done. I don't know what the database is and the knowledge is, but are there some, sometimes you have aquifers that are either perched or they're otherwise isolated from that surface water that's adjacent to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or just the pressures being what they are, the flow off of the mountain range and the draw out to the ocean results in a lack of connectivity between that river and those aquifers. So these are not questions that can't be answered. Perhaps they've already been answered, but if they haven't been answered, I would think that that would be the next step.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of having the ability to just make greater density, develop new developments and so forth, we really don't know at this point what the potential is.
Well, I think at some levels, though, Lee, what we're talking about in terms of workforce housing is much more modest than an 1,100 home tract. You know,
yeah.
Some infill projects where we have six units, half of which are deed restricted to local businesses or to the school or to the hospital, those kinds of things. If we could start there, I think then that's a much more achievable goal, kind of much more low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And these bigger questions about water access and, you know, large scale developments, I think, you know, those could be, you know, argued for down the road, because I think we can solve some of the immediate problem by keeping our sites a little bit, I don't want to say lower, because it's not lower, but I think a little more modest or a little more achievable.
And that's the chunk that you're biting off at this point.
Right.
And can you tell us a little bit more about those kind of projects, what they look like?
Well, we are actually embarking on something I think that has already been concluded in Coos County, and it's somewhat addressed in our housing action plan, is identification of parcels, what Shannon was speaking about earlier. We're a little bit behind the curve on that. So that's actually one of our kind of primary action items right now, is to develop an inventory, develop a map to say, okay, in the county, what are properties that are potentially buildable? They're either owned by the county, they're owned by the school district, they're owned by a medical facility, they're owned by a faith-based nonprofit. And those are potential properties that could be developed. And so that's a good kind of action step for us right now. Once those, and there may actually even be some of them where there's already projects that are underway, and for whatever reason, they've stalled. And so that's really kind of our key action step right now, is to begin to identify that, create that map, and then, as they're doing in Coos County, begin to attack those projects one by one. What's the issue with this project? Is that project, could that project move forward if this certain resource was applied to it? And so, you know, so there is, I think, potential.
A lot of problem solving there.
Yeah, but there's potential. I think, you know, what Shannon touched on again earlier was that the problems are well understood.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've done a lot of studies. We've had a lot of discussions. And so it's one of the things we've tried to do as a team is we've tried to turn the corner and say, okay, those problems are well defined and they can seem insurmountable. But based on the resources that we have right now at our disposal, what are some positive steps that we can begin to take? And so we've really spend most of our time in our meetings now talking about solutions and less about problems, which
of course
is really encouraging.
Yes.
You know, because you hear the stories and it's like, wow, this is really, you know, it can feel hopeless.
Yeah.
And you do have real people right now in real situations that are not very favorable. And so you can become a little bit locked up thinking, you know, there's nothing we can do about this. But I think there are real positive steps that we can begin to take. And so for us, one of those is to beginning to create that property map and identifying properties that do have the potential for building that aren't going to face, hurdles like access to water and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more infill kind of projects, mm-hmm. those kind of things.
So you're talking, like what you mentioned a few minutes ago, like maybe a 6-unit development that would be at the workforce level, that mid-level,
right.
In terms of the cost to the person, but then they'd be dedicated to that particular group, whether it would be the hospital or something like that.
Yeah, and then those can be, you know, there's so many different configurations those kinds of things can take. There could be a group like a NeighborWorks Umpqua that wants to participate in a project, or there's groups that create community land trusts. And so they could maybe be the owner of the land, and then the buildings that are put on top of it can be purchased by individual homeowners at a discounted price, but it's deed restricted and those kinds of
right.
things. So there's lots of those kind of creative solutions that, you know, having this large group, all talking together, we can come up with some of those solutions.
So the deed restriction is reflected in the price, but that makes it more affordable. It all makes sense.
Right. And then it remains in that affordable category even when the next person buys it, even when it's sold and then the
exactly.
next person buys it. It stays in the affordable inventory.
Yeah. We're using that word affordable again.
Yeah.
Oh, how else could we say that? I'm not really sure. But in the meantime, I'm going to say you're listening to KCIW LP Curry Coast Community Radio, 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon. So these are the kinds of projects that you're looking at, these small infill projects for the most part. Are there other areas that you have your fingers in, or is that really the primary focus of these two groups?
I'd say up in Coos, we have the potential for some larger projects. We have some private developers that have come into the area that are working on more workforce housing
mm-hmm.
and borderline market housing, pretty high-end manufactured homes. But, a good amount of them, a good track of them. Of course, we have the ever controversial potential for Jordan Cove Energy to move in, and associated with that is the development of a temporary man camp. And right now, the discussions have halted until there's a decision about whether or not they come to town or not. But that would be something that Jordan Cove Energy is well aware that our housing action team would very much like to sit down and talk to them about removing the word temporary from that workforce housing moving forward. And the other kind of brainstorm that we're kicking around right now is the realization that the tribal entities, tribal nations in Coos have considerable land holdings. And in some cases, they're really well positioned in terms to access to transportation and et cetera. Of course, they have limitations on ownership within their boundaries, but they're certainly set up for business to serve the rental market. So that there might be some collaborative efforts that we can look at some very significant development in collaboration between the tribes and the U.S. Public government and all of those entities, as well as those private investors and employers that have been stepping up to the table.
And I wouldn't say that we're ruling out larger projects. I was just using these smaller infill projects as an example of lower hanging fruit.
Well, and also, your organization is starting fresh and new, and so probably smaller scale is a good thing to get started on,
yeah.
right?
Well, the land mapping exercises would actually determine which projects might move forward as far as priorities, and
more
those could
easily.
Be larger projects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about the land mapping process. How long is it going to take? Do you have a sense
of that?
That's
a great question. So
you wish it was tomorrow or yesterday even maybe. But
well, there has been some work already done that mm-hmm. is part of the Housing Action Plan. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm not exactly sure what the status is of those maps, what information was used to develop the maps, when it was developed, and that uh-huh. kind of thing. Like Gold Beach recently, the city of Gold Beach recently commissioned a land study within their city boundaries, and that is in draft form right now. I think it's about to be finalized, and so that study will have done that work for us. What are the zoning within the city of Gold Beach? What are parcels that are available for building, that kind of thing? And so that could be actually just within the next, you know, couple of weeks or couple of months, ready for the use by the housing task force. But for the rest of the county, I really can't answer that because I don't know what is actually in place right now. One of the discussions we're going to have as a core team actually tomorrow and then at our meeting on July 17th is can we put together a subcommittee that can seek to understand that and then report back to the larger group? What is the status and of that, I guess you'd call it asset mapping, land parcel mapping, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to also make sure that folks at home who would like to see the housing plan, you said that just came out last fall?
Yes.
Is there an easy way for people to access that if they want to take a look at it in person?
There was up until a few days ago.
Because just missed it?
No, it was coming back again. But it is hosted by United Way of Southwest Oregon on their site.
Uh-huh.
And their site is currently undergoing renovation. And so if you click on their website right now, you just get a screen saying,
come back
coming
soon.
Yeah, yeah. So
by the time this gets aired, which is probably 6 weeks from now, it might be back up again.
Yeah, so they can just type in Housing Coalition, United Way of Southwest Oregon, and it'll take you to their website. And you can view it online or you can print a copy.
That's great. So we have a limited amount of time left. I want to make sure that we point people at whatever resources are out there. I mean, it's an area that I think so many people here in the county are aware of and concerned about. What can the average person do if they want to educate themselves more or participate more? I know that's not really your groups per se, but are there resources that you would point them to online or anything else that somebody could sort of re-educate themselves a little bit?
Well, I think that what you just brought up is read the Housing Action Plan that was produced by the consultant. It's very informative. But I would say the second thing is for the average person to really consider the idea that housing is a critical part of our community infrastructure and really for our community to thrive long-term at all levels, their housing needs to be addressed. And that, you know, that could take on a number of different, that could look a number of different ways for the average person. It could be just their opportunity to listen to their public officials and to see how seriously the public officials take this issue. And that could be reflected in their choice when it comes, you know, to their ballot mm-hmm. or just in their conversation with their neighbor. And so I think that's probably the primary thing that I would say is really educate yourself on the importance of housing for the community as a whole. And really, maybe it becomes more important. I think oftentimes when we think of housing, when I bring this up with the average person, they immediately go to the issue of homelessness, which is part of the issue. But it's a much broader issue and a much, I think, more complex issue. And we all need, every level of our community needs to take every form of housing more seriously.
Oh, for sure. I could just wish I could have the time to tell you all the anecdotal mm-hmm. stories that I hear. And I'm sure you've heard them too about, you know, folks really being so desperate for a place to live. And it's getting to where, you know, you have to go about $300,000 in the regular housing market nowadays to find something, a basic 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, you know. Of course, maybe that's the future, that we won't be having that many 2-bath houses. We'll be simplifying our expectations a little bit as we go along. But what do you think is the future that we're looking at down the road? Are we Are we going to best this problem? Are we going to be successful? What does the future look like in your mind?
We must. We must. It's one of those adapt or die situations. Honestly,
absolutely.
It's a barrier to our education, to our economies, to our living in place. So it really is an all hands on deck kind of a situation. And for those that have been living maybe at the higher end of the spectrum and have been a little bit out of touch because all of their needs are met, I think it's important to contemplate how workforce housing is important to everyone, because without it, there's no one to take care of the basic services that we all rely on. And in terms of things that some, you know, just average people can think about doing, know that you now have some additional opportunities if you're looking for another income stream. Do you have the capacity to build a mother-in-law quarter? Do you have space for a teeny or tiny home on your property? That's kind of a win-win opportunity. So make sure that if you've looked into that in the past and were told no, that you ask about it again and see if there might be a path forward for you to be part of the solution and also help out your own situation there. And the other is not necessarily for everyone an average, but if you're listening to this and you're thinking, hey, I'm a developer, I'm interested in getting in on this game, this is a priority for me, or I'm a builder, or I'm a realtor, I'm really familiar with what's going on in this area. Those are the members of our community that both of these groups, these action teams need. We need knowledgeable expertise, we need assets, we need coalition building members. They don't have to sit at all of the meetings and go through that. That's our job, is to know when to pick up the phone and call Lee and say, you know what, she could help us with that. So, and I think that United Way of Southwestern Oregon, if that is you and you fit that description, send them an email. Jen is the director, and she's engaged with both of those groups. And we do definitely have a target list of additional representation that we would like at our tables.
So do you have an email address for her off the top of your head? Is that possible? And in the meantime, I'm just wondering, do you happen to know about the ADUs and how many are allowed on a property? Is there only one allowed, or could you do a couple or three if you had plenty of land?
I don't know the answer to that.
You have to find out that part.
But those are great actionable items that we can do the research for and get that information disseminated back out. That's a really good idea.
So, Lee, I think I did not mention Jen Schaefer as part of our core team for the Curry County Housing Task Force. And you can send her an email at info@unitedwaysw.org. So it's United Way of Southwest Oregon, but it's abbreviated SWO.org, info@unitedway.org.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm so glad we've had a chance to at least hit the high points. There's so much more we could be talking about here. But I want to thank Shannon Souza and Rob Foster of our Housing Task Force here in Curry and Coos County, and really appreciate you coming on. It's been a great conversation. I want to thank also Pi Wyatt, our technical support and co-producer. This is Lee Tooley for Reality Check on KCIW, and thank you for listening.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.